Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
What? Assassinating my Archduke friends, Ferdinands.
Cody, happenstance.
Have we started?
I kind of stole that from you. Yes.
Cool.
Because Cody says, what's haps in my bergs? And I was like, I can.
You just yes anded that.
I can take a little spin on that.
Yeah. Lead it somewhere else, you know?
If you were going to kill the heir to the Austro-Hungarian throne in Sarajevo in 1914, how would you have done it?
Look, all I can do is my first instinct, and the word that came to my mind was crossbow.
Crossbow. Yeah. Now, that's fascinating, Katie, because a lot of people would have said, you know, 1914, guns are hip and new, but you're not beholden to trends.
Look, I'm still, even on modern day guns, they scare me. I feel like an old time gun would just knock me on my ass.
So crossbow,
crossbow it is. Yes, I could definitely wield that.
I respect your willingness to go old school when assassinating the heir to the Austro-Hungarian throne and setting off a series of
things
that fall over in a line?
Houses of cards?
Wars.
No.
Dominoes.
Dominoes. That's the one. I respect your willingness to set those dominoes off with a crossbow, Katie. That's
classic. I'm a classic kind of gal.
Yeah,
that's my whole vibe.
That's honorable. You know, a lot of people would say if you're going to assassinate the heir to the Austro-Hungarian throne, you gotta honor our new age of technological progress. But you say no.
Mm-mm.
You can.
I'm
kill
not one of those.
Embrace tradition.
Anything. Embrace tradition. That's right.
But in my own way, because like the most obvious answer, me being a woman, would be to use poison, and I'm gonna push back against that because I think it's a gender stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cop out. And there's a lot of room for error.
Yeah,
not like with a crossbow.
Frames women as deceitful.
Yeah,
right.
It does.
I don't need to hide. I'll do it.
Exactly. And I'll just say it. If you poison Archduke Franz Ferdinand, people might go, "Well, maybe he died naturally."
Yeah.
And then there's no World War One. And if there's no World War One, what are we even doing here?
What are we even doing here?
You got to make it clear. Ideally, you get away with it, but it needs to be a clear assassination.
You gotta assassinate the Archduke of Austria-Hungary, clearly. I think we can all agree on that. Well, this leads us naturally into our subject for today.
Yeah, very seamless.
How do y'all feel about infrastructure?
Fucking
really glad you didn't say Biden.
No, we'll save that for when we finally get Bernie Sanders on the show and can talk to him about the best ways to assassinate sitting presidents.
Yeah, we
get him
should...
a number two. Bernie, do it a second time.
Yeah, we should talk about some infrastructure probs.
We should also
lead to other things.
The screenplay that I'm writing that's just Terminator 2, but with Bernie Sanders instead of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so do you
want
to do
John
that now?
Connor, it's Joe Biden.
Oh,
no,
that's
I pretty
fun.
Much laid it all out.
That's enough. I got enough info. Shot for shot, right?
Well, yeah, he comes back when Biden's fighting Corn Pop, and then and then Corn Pop and Biden have to team up in order to fight a robotic Bernie Sanders.
Pitch it to Ben Shapiro's company.
Yeah, we can make it work. Okay.
Okay, infrastructure.
just wait for the details.
Yeah, guys.
Yeah.
End of last week, Biden announced with great fanfare, that's fun, that Dems and Republicans have made a deal on infrastructure. He did it, you know? He fucking did it. He bridged the divide.
He finally did the thing that is the entire reason he told people to vote for him.
He pulled through, except, wait, did he? What's this? I'm going to read from Vox. For a moment last week, President Joe Biden's vision of a deal-making bipartisan Senate that gets big things done for the American people looked like it could soon become a reality. With Biden's announcement that the Democrats and Republicans have a deal on infrastructure, it seemed both sides in Washington, D.C. were on the verge of coming together to pass a large bill, one that would not only help rebuild America's roads and bridges, but also potentially move to tackle climate change, expand access to broadband internet, and remove lead from drinking water. All of those sentences, I just want to go at, But anyway, I'm going to keep going here. Yeah. Then things got complicated. Biden said he wouldn't sign the deal if congressional Democrats didn't also pass a separate reconciliation bill enacting the rest of his agenda. That invited a Republican revolt, as previous backers like Senators Lindsey Graham and Jerry Morin threatened to pull support. Though Biden has walked back his remarks, it's still not clear if the infrastructure deal can now get the 10 Republican votes it needs to overcome a filibuster in the Senate. I just wanted to start off with that because I thought it was fun. He had a moment of celebrating. There was just this big announcement of this bipartisan deal that I immediately was like, okay, really?
Yeah, you got all the, you got all the hits there. You got your Romney in the background. You got your Sinema. You got the whole crew's there.
They wanted a win. They wanted a win after the epic failure of voting rights. But yeah, basically this deal... that was announced and enjoyed a few hours of media victory was already barely getting enough support as it was.
See, that's why we call it the art of the deal. Because you don't actually need to do the deal, but you need to present
it
as
though to make
you are the deal maker.
Deal
I'm the deal maker.
It.
I had the conference. I said
so. There's one thing we've learned from the last fucking forever. yeah, no. But so the only reason... that this tenuous deal came to be is because he removed a lot of the big picture items that we desperately need, especially ones that focus on climate change. And the plan, you know, as announced, would be to push some of these other things through during the reconciliation process, which were more likely to get enough support. More likely. It's not for sure.
Because, yeah, the threshold's
because
be
then
lower.
When you do that, then you got the Joe Manchin saying, I don't want anything that's too political, et cetera.
Joe's Manchin, yeah.
Joe's Manchin.
I love politicians
Joe's
who
House
are like, hey, let's
Manchin.
Not get political here.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating. Right now, I'm feeling we're going to talk about some climate change and some of the shit that we're seeing happening around the country in this episode. But for me... as we talk about infrastructure and we see this pretty typical display happening right now, I'm very frustrated by the lack of consensus from everybody at how fucking dire and urgent it is that we need to address these climate change related issues. The infrastructure, our cities, we're going to talk about it, but we're not built to withstand the changes that we're seeing.
No, I mean, I'm up in Oregon right now, which yesterday from when we record this and a couple of days ago from when you listen to it was like one of like literally the three or four hottest places on planet Earth. We had 2 days in a row in Portland where, and other parts of Oregon, obviously, where it was hotter. And again, Portland and you know, Oregon, Northern Oregon, than it has ever been in Florida. Florida, you may recognize as much further south than Oregon.
The entire Northwest.
Than the place that's very close to Canada?
Canada. No, Canada.
Yeah,
I mean, I've got notes for our later sections on all of this.
And
but
Canada
yeah.
got that hot. Well, got very hot in the triple digits. And in addition to it just being a horrible sign that it could get this hot here, because it's we're close to like 10 degrees above the highest ever that we'd gotten in this part of the world. It's shown some weaknesses in our infrastructure. There were roads buckling. The power grid did, compared to Texas, and I'll talk about Texas in a second, it did better than Texas. I will give us that. But why it did better than Texas is that only about half, less than half, I think, of families in Portland have an air conditioner. And up in Seattle, where it was about the same temperature, it was even fewer than that because Seattle has the lowest rate of air conditioning systems per home of any city in the United States. So we did okay. There were some outages. It wasn't too bad up here during the heat wave. But one of the things that has been reported on as a result of the heat wave in the days leading up to it, people bought out all of the air conditioners that were in stores in the PNW. And while we're out right now, more are going to be coming in. And throughout the summer, people are going to keep buying AC. And it's probable we'll be okay this summer because it's going to take people a while to get them installed. Maybe we don't have a heat wave the rest of this summer that's quite as bad as it was earlier this summer. It's hard to say right now. But what I'm mainly worried about, and it could become a problem later this summer, but I'm mainly worried about next summer, you're going to have a much higher rating of people in Washington and in Oregon with AC. And that's going to strain the power grid. And in addition, we've already had issues with the grid. Like, we had to take our a big chunk of our public transit system offline because they were basically streetcars that have these, you know, streetcars run on a like they're wired into the power grid, right? They're electric. And we had the power lines connecting the streetcars to the grid fraying. And there's, I think, some debate as to whether or not they actually melted or the heat just kind of weakened the structural integrity enough that friction was able to wear through the lines.
But either way, not good.
Not good, and evidence that, like, we're having, and there have been other problems with, when we talk about infrastructure, climate change is obviously a critical part of that, but it's much more complicated than kind of just the fact that it's hotter or just the fact that we're getting more rain or more snow, because earlier this year, Portland got more snow than it had gotten in decades, and that caused problems, too. But there's other issues. One of them is that we are chronically understaffed right now in our hospitals, and there's a variety of reasons for that. A lot of it comes down to the fact that due to COVID, we lost a lot of healthcare workers, which everywhere in the country did. It's been particularly bad in Northern Oregon, and it's led to, and it's not been, like, I have a friend who works at one of the local hospitals who's been saying things along the lines of, hey, don't go to the hospital, like, don't get hurt, basically, because we don't have any extra space. And that's tied into a variety of things. Obviously, the fact the plague is tied into climate change, but it's just in general, we're in this constantly escalating problem of different things in our society being tested and wearing against each other and fraying. And when one thing breaks, there's no time to fix it before the next set of things breaks. Like, one of the things that came out in the news the same week as we got hit by this fucking heat wave, which strained our infrastructure here in the Northwest so much, is that for a variety of reasons, we don't have enough chlorine to properly filter our water. It was a supply chain issue. And it's, again, probably going to be okay this time, but it's going to happen again, and eventually, for whatever reason, it won't be okay. You know, that's the way this shit keeps going, and it's just continuing to be a real problem.
And I personally am not feeling confident in any leaders anywhere at leading the charge in proactively addressing some of these things, like the things that are in this bill that have now been removed to go into the reconciliation process. All of this stuff to be negotiated and squabbled over needed to happen a long time ago. You know, these changes needed to be in place. We need to be proactively facing the reality of the situation, because it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And it's going to have an exponential event as more of these cracks start to build.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that when the cracks show themselves, if you don't fix them, if you just kind of paper over them, which is generally what we do, then the next thing that hits, that crack also gets wider, and it eventually exacerbates whatever problem is happening. Like, for example, we're talking about healthcare, right? The problem, the shortage of qualified healthcare workers, started years before COVID. You could find stories saying we've got tens of thousands fewer doctors than we need to meet demand. We're short on cardiologists. We're short on nurses. We're short on healthcare workers. This was a problem that had been escalating on and off for more than a decade. And then we got hit by COVID, and that made it worse. And now everybody's coming back, and we suddenly have this situation where people are, like, zooming back to do the things they couldn't do during COVID. And as a result, more of them are getting into car accidents or whatever. And we've got more people getting heat stroke, and that puts further strain on the system, which has just been weakened. It's this, I mean, it's part of the problem with the way just we've decided our society is going to run, where we never fix a problem. We just freak out over it its most obvious.
Yeah, we respond to it eventually.
Yeah. Maybe.
The conversations are, the conversation it shifts so seamlessly from one to the other. And part of it is, you know, for decades, Republicans denied that it even existed. And then they went to, like, okay, it might exist. And then it's like, okay, it might exist, but we didn't have anything to do with it. And it's like, okay, it might exist. We might have had something to do with it. And maybe we'll do something, and so on and so forth. But, like, now it just seems like it is, like, well, this is just how it is. We're accepting that we're, like every few days, there's, like, a new article, like, by the way, millions of people will die.
Yeah.
Can I retell you this thing from Twitter a couple days ago? I'm not sure if you guys saw this. It didn't garner that much attention. As far as I could tell, a city in Pakistan, Jacobabad, I believe that's how I pronounced it, is now recording temperatures that scientists are believing surpass the thresholds of humans being able to live. We're talking like 127 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
It's this mixture of heat and humidity has made it one of only two places on Earth to now officially have passed that threshold. It won't be the last, those two places, you know. This is happening now.
Yeah, I mean, this week we're hitting... Oh, sorry. Yeah. No, not this week. We've been hitting for a while 129, 130 degree temperatures in the Middle East, and with the heat index in places like Baghdad in the next week, it's supposed to be like over 140.
Unbelievable.
Which is
uninhabitable.
You know, we'll kill your ass. Yeah, and this has been happening for a while. We freak out a lot more when it's in the Pacific Northwest, both because it doesn't have a reputation for being hot, and also because, you know, white people.
Sure.
As opposed to people,
our skin's not equipped for it.
Yeah, and just like in general, people don't care when bad things happen to Iraq. But it is like that. That's who's going to be dying in mass.
Once it comes to your neighborhood,
again, I keep talking about like the loops that get set up by this. So right, one of the loops that we've all been dealing with the consequences of for a while is this modern surge in the far right was driven to a meaningful extent. By the refugee crisis that started in 2011 as a result of primarily the Syrian civil war, but a bunch of different fighting that broke out after the Arab Spring brought a lot of refugees, particularly into Europe. This was a major driver of recruitment and a big driver of like a lot of propaganda that the far right globally and in Europe in particular spun off on. We saw the same thing in the United States, right? We all remember 2016. Trump made a lot of bones about all these refugees coming in from Muslim countries. And we're going to see an increased number of climate refugees in the next decade and, you know, beyond. And those climate refugees and that increasing immigration crisis, at least that's how it's going to be framed by people who have an interest in scaring people over immigration, is going to drive more support to the far right, which is going to cause an increase in these kind of policies that exacerbate the problems we're already having, climate change and whatnot. And it's this, again, these feedback loops keep feeding into one another and making everything worse. And you can't just, the problem that like liberals in particular, but also the left, because I mean, the left hasn't figured out any solution to this. Like, and if people on the left who are like, whatever, I don't know, Dengists or Marxists or whatever, tell you, no, I've got the solution. Well, none of them's figured it out. None of them's actually done anything that has broken this cycle because we keep getting stuck in these reactive loops. Everyone in the fragmented left is stuck in these reactive loops, either yelling at other people who are not as far left or yelling at the right, but not actually proposing anything that's going to break this reinforcing cycle of acceleration. And that's actually what needs to happen. Like, we can't just keep reacting to the problem, to the problems, because that just continues to feed into the cycle, really, because reaction is a part of this
and
accelerating cycle.
A reaction
cycle.
Is not enough.
A
reaction isn't fixing the problem, isn't doing anything, and it's not being proactive. I would love to have, I mean, we need, every single politician needs to have this as the forefront of their agenda. We need legislation and encore. I mean, there's so much. I don't know. Just to even mitigate what's happening and to prepare for what is coming. This is outside of even investing in.
We should make water a right.
Sure.
Nip it in the bud.
Yeah.
There's a, well, because it's not just going to be like the climate refugees from other countries. Like, it will be cross state lines.
Us.
Like, we're gonna have like, there will be areas in the United States that will be unlivable, and what do those people do? They're gonna just, you know, what's the Shapiro idea? Sell your home and move.
Yeah. I mean, we already have that happening in Oregon. A bunch of Californians have been coming up to Portland for a while because of the increase. Because a lot of California is in a desperate state right now with the fires. And with the drought, and has
a lot
been,
of drought going on.
Yeah, and so
been getting worse for years. People keep coming up to Portland. Portland's going to be the same climate as Sacramento yes. in like 30 years.
If this, I will say yeah. the smartest thing Trump could have done, it's a great idea, should have gone through with it, buy Greenland.
Shit.
Buy Greenland.
Should have bought it. Should have bought Greenland.
Mm-hmm. Buy Greenland it. And then truck the water that is in Greenland into California.
Mm-hmm.
By trucks, ideally. That's the most efficient
yeah,
way to
it.
Move water from one place mm-hmm. to the next. And you could even get like big C-130s to carry the water trucks from Greenland to California.
Exactly. Make a spectacle out of it.
Make a spectacle
yeah, that
out of it.
Sounds
exactly.
good for the environment.
It'll be great for the environment, Katie.
Hand out little flags. Come on. Little water flags.
We have to take a break, but just bringing it back to infrastructure real quick, I guess just reiterating the thing that I already said, we'll see how this plays out, this pretty predictable partisan drama over something that is so important, so vitally important. But it was hard for me to celebrate the victory dance and the media rollout of he's doing it, folks. when we're just glossing over the very, very, very dire things that are at stake here. And I think that that often gets lost in these conversations about we're doing our best and fuck Joe Manchin and goddamn mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell and Pelosi's grandstanding, all of that. True. The core here that we all need to be focused on. And nobody wants to talk about climate change. The news networks don't like to air it because ratings death bomb.
They don't watch it. Yeah,
but we need to. We need to be talking about this all the time.
Yeah, it's a ratings death bomb, in part because they're a big part of why it's so bad. This like false equivalency that's continued to be practiced in the fucking media. And there was a great example of how complicit the media is in this situation getting bad. That's tied into climate change, wasn't directly. There's a big Washington Post op-ed recently that was about like the war on truth and how the concept of truth is being eroded. And even within that article, they felt the need to, as they were talking about two forces eroding truth, they said, well, on the left side, you have like the deconstructionists and these other epistemological scholars who were kind of like debating like, you know, the nature of truth and how accurate like a lot of our ideas. And they're like, and then you have like, and that's basically one side of what Tucker Carlson is doing. And it's like, no, it's fucking not.
Wait a second.
They compared fascist propaganda to
I will,
like philosophy.
Yeah.
Like, pontificating on the nature of truth is the same?
Yeah.
That is wild.
Nobody has learned anything from the past 4 years.
Yep.
What the fuck?
We have to take a break. But when we come back, we'll have more of this.
Yeah.
On talking.
When you think about it, talking about truth is the same as lying.
Yeah. I will read a quote from the article when we come back and we can deal.
Can't
with
wait.
That.
That's something to look forward to, eh?
Yeah.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
And we're back with the truth.
With the truth.
Welcome to Truthcast.
Welcome to the
Fact Pod.
I think Truth
of America.
Truth time.
I don't like this. It's weird.
You don't like Truthcast?
No, I don't like when you do that voice. It just.
Truthcast, fact pod.
Okay. We were talking about this incredible Washington Post article by Lee McIntyre, who's a research fellow at Boston University and the author of a book called Post Truth. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute. The article is called A War on Truth is Raging. Not everyone recognizes we're in it. Good title, broadly accurate statement. Here's where it becomes bullshit, about 60% of the way into the article. Attacks on the concept of objective truth are not new. Left-wing attacks on objectivity date at least to the 1970s, with the rise of academic trends such as deconstructionism and postmodernism. Not long after, conservative media began attacking truth systematically, for example, through the rise of demagogues like Rush Limbaugh, who railed against the four corners of deceit, government, academia, science, and the media. So, again, they can't get, and the Washington Post is if we ever get, you know, a fucking, I don't know, Nuremberg trial over who was responsible for killing the fucking climate, the Washington Post will be up on the fucking dock. They did plenty to legitimize the people saying there's no problem or we don't need to do anything yeah. about the problem. They're complicit. And this that article is a perfect example of the complicity of this false equivalency between people being like, hey, we should like maybe reevaluate the way in which we seek truth, as opposed to saying science is a lie. I'm Rush Limbaugh.
Just like blatantly lying, just like choosing to lie to mislead people is that is what a comparison.
It's amazing, Cody. Fucking good. I just
how do you write that? And then somebody read it and was like, you publish.
Lee McIntyre wrote that and went back to his, I'm sure, highly paid job at the Brookings Institute being like, actually, good things and bad things are the same. All right. I'm taking lunch for the day.
Dust off his shoulders. I did it.
Yeah.
God.
I mean, and that is, we're talking about infrastructure today, and there's been a continuing, which is a good conversation, actually. And I think a lot of Democrats have actually been a positive part of expanding the conversation of what infrastructure is, right? And I think one of the positive developments recently is that there's been an increasing move. And again, Democrats get a lot of credit for this, of pushing for, well, home health care is infrastructure.
Mm-hmm,
child care is infrastructure. A lot of things
That those are probably the things that have been removed. Move to the reconciliation.
Yes.
Package,
I'm not trying to be. I'm just trying to be fair.
I know. Well, I love that. I just want to make sure people are clear about what's happening here.
This is not going to be the
original thing that he put out, and we talked about it a couple months ago. Does have a lot of far-reaching things that are not traditionally considered infrastructure. That would be cool. But I do not believe they have not put out the actual specifics of this. It's all very vague of this new one, so we don't know for sure. But we're pretty sure that some of this stuff has been moved. Anyway, sorry, Robert, continue.
But it is positive to expand. Yes. And again, especially since we keep talking about how this Overton window keeps getting shifted right and shifted right and shifted right. An aspect of shifting it left is expanding. Okay, no, infrastructure is not just fucking roads and bridges. It's your family. It's being taken care of as an individual. It's being able to not wind up triple digits in debt to school, maybe. It's not having healthcare debt, maybe. It's like a variety of things that haven't traditionally been considered infrastructure. Human beings and our ability to participate positively because we're not drowning in a sea of despair is infrastructure. I think truth is infrastructure too. I think an understanding of like the basics of reality that's widely shared by the society is actually crucial infrastructure, perhaps even as important as all of the physical infrastructure that gets traditionally looped in there. And I think maybe the biggest problem we have, and even the biggest problem in expanding, the functionality of our the power system of roads and bridges, is this lack of understanding of basic reality. And this has become increasingly clear. You can tie it into a lot of stuff that's happened recently. It's a problem. So right now, one of the big stories in the United States is that this fucking condo complex in Florida collapsed. And
awful.
Probably around 160 people are dead. I think there's 11 confirmed deaths as of right now and 150 missing.
Yeah, 11 confirmed. Yeah. Now they're also concerned about the debris that's falling on the rescue and aid workers.
It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. And I want to open this caveat by saying we don't 100% know what caused the collapse, right? There is a decent possibility that this is very tied to global warming, to climate change, whatever, because it seems like a sinkhole was a factor here or may have been. And I found, you can find a number of studies. I found one from 2018, a case study in Florida. Global warming causes an increase in sinkhole collapse. This is a thing that has been documented for some time. It may be a factor here. It may not be. This may just be a factor of Florida has a big boner for deregulation. The governor a year or so ago hosted like a deregulathon. I forget exactly how he framed it, talking about like cutting away regulation. Florida has even before, like fuck DeSantis, but decades before DeSantis, Florida was like one of the least regulated states in terms of how you could actually build housing, right? So they put up a lot of weird shit.
I mean, their whole movement,
So I have a little bit of information on this.
Yeah, their whole movement is like,
you're completely correct that as they investigate this, this might be a part of it. And it's likely, it could be a contributing factor to everything. There have been visible cracks in this building. In Florida, they have to do a review every 30 years. And this building in particular It sounds like they brought in an inspector 3 years ago who notified several.
Who seems to have done their job.
Seems to have. Well, they apparently just got put on administrative leave. But he didn't. They didn't say that it was a potentially catastrophic structural stuff, but that they pointed out critical things, you know, in the parking garage and everything. But what's interesting is then, you know, why did it take? They were just gearing up to start doing some repairs, and in fact, we're doing some re-roofing things like this week before this started, or last week. But they were making the condo owners. We're about to make them all pay like $80,000 each for general repairs, and none of it being specifically to this. But like, they needed to do over $9 million in building repairs, and they were going and collecting it from the people that were like, "Wait, what?" You know. So it does sound like 100% all of this deregulation, general lack of attention or urgency to something that is of utmost urgency.
Yeah, and it's so I again, we're going to find out more about like what precisely caused this, but it is worrisome that it seemed like there were a lot of warnings that there might be a problem. And I read an article recently where somebody who was at one of like the condo board meetings or whatever was like, well, you know, just a little bit before, I think it was like a month or so before this all collapsed, we had a meeting about some of the repairs that needed to be done. And we were told that the building had gotten a clean bill of health from the inspector and that we were fine. You know, there was some stuff to do, but it wasn't a serious issue. And that doesn't seem to have been true. I like, maybe we're talking too much about this, but I do think like this sort of thing is going to become increasingly common because a variety of, you know, not just sinkholes in Florida. We're dealing with more extreme weather in places that hadn't gotten it before, tornadoes in places that haven't gotten tornadoes, flooding in places that aren't used to dealing with flooding.
Even the fluctuation, like extreme heat and extreme cold. Back and forth. Puts a lot of strain on things too.
And all looping in on this is this unwillingness to deal with unpleasant realities. Whether it's a the condo association not wanting to acknowledge that the problem is as bad as it is, or it's the state itself not being willing to put up requirements for structural integrity of buildings that actually keep people safe, there's a bunch of different problems, but a lot of it does tie back to this very American understanding that we don't have to take precautions or concern ourselves with physical realities because we're Americans. And if we, with enough wishful thinking and money, we can allay material concerns like this, which I think is, broadly speaking, a chunk of the problem. And an example of this, the kind of infrastructure that, you know, we talk, and we'll talk more this episode about the kind of infrastructure that Biden and his administration should be forcing through, the kind of infrastructure that our whole government should be investing more in, Republican and Democrat. But there's also the kind of infrastructure, the kind of mental infrastructure, the willingness to deal with hard realities, the willingness to accept where we are, that you can't force through as the government. That is a cultural infrastructure. And it's this, you know, I think when we talk about cultural infrastructure, it's stuff like, why do certain cultures weather disasters well and like learn from them? Why do certain cultures not? Like, what is... And I think we have a very brittle culture when it comes to our ability to handle disaster. And I don't know, like, where to take that. But I think there's, you know, I think a good example of the brittleness of it is the people who actually run the city of Portland are Ted Wheeler and a bunch of business owners, right? The Portland Business Association. They're the folks who hold the purse strings, who control the cops, who... more than anything, direct like what actually happens in this city. And when we had our gigantic, horrible heat wave, and I'm focusing on Portland because I know the politics here better, but this kind of thing happens everywhere. The 3 days of the heat wave, his schedule was completely clear. We don't even know if he was in the city. And we know that he was out of the city when the riots started last year. So this is a thing of his.
He wasn't in the city.
Yeah, in fucking California, whenever the fires start, the people who have the money and by and large get to dictate what happens politically leave because they don't want to be near the fires, right? This is a thing that happens, whereas you've got the folks who were increasingly actually providing disaster services were like a bunch of different mutual aid groups who have been providing you know, kitchens and or who've been providing like cold water and cooling stations and stuff like that. Which is how it always happens particularly in Oregon, but increasingly everywhere. Like you've got these the political elites, be they left or right, will never stick around when things get hard because they have the ability to leave when things are hard. And it's up to those of us who either don't have the ability to leave or decide we're not going to leave our communities in the lurch to build the kind of mental infrastructure, emotional infrastructure that is going to make us capable of weathering the collapses to come. Anyway, let's get back to talking about Joe Biden.
Good tangent.
I mean, if there's anyone that can fix the brittleness of our culture, then it's Joe Biden, right?
Yes. Famously
the floppiest man
Joe
I know.
Biden. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Basically Gumby.
Yeah. Munching on fingers. Doing that eye thing that happened.
Mm-hmm. That eye thing when it fills with blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Giving weird massages.
Yeah.
I have nothing more to add on that specific thing. I think you're right, and it's just frustrating to see all of this just play out as predicted. And you know, when you're Joe Biden and you're having these bipartisan talks, surely he understands that half the people there don't think anything should happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Like the reason that they're participating in this is because, well, I guess we gotta do some sort of infrastructure bill. Like there's no driving force behind it other than politically,
mm-hmm.
like it needs to seem like they are obligated to do it. They don't actually believe these things are really problems, and they're certainly not that interested in investing any money into fixing these things. Because the method that will get a lot of money is taxing wealthy people, which they don't want to do. One thing I did want to add to your point about the conversation, I do think it is really good and effective, actually, that it has shifted a bit to include other things. And there was a pushback mm-hmm. originally of like, this isn't infrastructure. But by forcing the conversation and making people talk about it and explain what that means, mm-hmm. I think it has convinced a lot of people.
Yeah.
You see some movement on that?
Yeah. I think the window shifted a bit there. And in a similar regard, every day this conversation is still going on. But with something like defund the police, that's something that everyone, not everyone, but many people are like, no, it's too confusing. It's not what we want to do. It doesn't make sense in this and this. We should do reform the police. And then you have to explain, well, here's actually the phrase reform the police. It's decades old. Mm-hmm. Where has that gotten us? It's always used to increase funding. That's what it is. That's why it's so broad and vague on purpose so that it could mean anything. There's still so much pushback that's very vocal, but now it's not like, well, do the reform. And then you point out like, well, actually reform is like very vague on purpose. Then like, okay, well then do like, put funds elsewhere. Like they'll try to come up with a phrase that is more pointedly about reducing the funds of the police and putting them in other services, which is not where the conversation ever really was.
Right.
And so I guess just keep going is my point. Because now people who were against the idea of defund the police are now forced to have like a conversation like, okay, then how do we phrase it so it's not vague? And how do we phrase it so it is taking away funds and moving them to these services without scaring people? So it's just like the end point of policy is now on the table, even if the messaging is still kind of messy.
to be bringing up the conversation in a way that garners enough attention to actually have the conversation, as opposed to something, a saying, a phrase that we've had and ignored for a long time.
Yeah.
I see what you mean. I mean, and it's true. These are things that we have got to be talking about, and we need to be having the conversation. So I see the point that you're making.
Thank goodness.
We have to take another break for the ad.
Yeah.
Advertisements, as they say across the pond. Here they are. Shit.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
And we're back from that fun time.
Oh, yeah.
Shit.
We're back as fuck.
For more of this talking.
Right. Sorry. We can get into a little more specifics on like what could be in the bill. I just wanted to this interesting this approach because there's this push for bipartisanship when obviously like it's going to fall apart. And then putting forth this idea of okay, well, we'll do this infrastructure bill if Democrats do this reconciliation stuff and like really like push through this kind of thing. So like the goal is already to do that. So it's such theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just frustrating to watch like clear and obvious theater just like play out. It's like, okay, and then this and this and this. And then they're going to say, well, if you're going to, because already Republicans are like, well, if you're going to push this through in reconciliation, then we're not going to do this bipartisan bill.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well, yeah, obviously. So like just do it. Just do the thing. Instead of play acting that you're trying to get people on board when they're obviously going to abandon it when they find out that you're going to do this stuff anyway. But
blow up the filibuster.
Yeah, blow up something.
Something.
Yeah, and it's very unclear to me right now. Maybe one of you has gotten a better handle on it. What actual climate shit is in the infrastructure bill and what is in the one that they reached some accord with the Republicans on, and what is in the one that's being reconciliation did?
It's unclear. So this is
what I found
in terms of what's actually in there. They have agreed to a very vague framework that includes funding for roads and bridges, public transit, passenger and freight rail, electric vehicle infrastructure, clean drinking water, and broadband internet, among a few other areas. The agreement goes into almost no detail beyond those broad categories, with now lawmakers now working to get more specific as they transform that framework into actual legislation. So no, you don't have a deal. You haven't even gotten more specific about what this means. You know, so no, not a lot, because all of these policies, environment, I mean, you could say some of it, electric vehicle infrastructure is more geared to climate change, etc. But for the most part, this feels pretty traditional. And so I think that a lot of the other things would be hopefully included in the reconciliation. But to me, this feels fishy. We're not going to get that stuff. But
like
I don't know. Maybe I'm just jaded.
So in theory, right, the thing that the White House is claiming is that the Americans' job plan includes nearly $1 trillion in what they call climate-related investments, not all of which are what people who really think about climate change a lot might consider actual things to fight climate change. But it's a mix of like attempting to, additionally fund or whatever. Incite seems like the wrong word, but attempting to like push up the electric vehicle market, attempting to make buildings and property more resistant to different kind of weather patterns that are going to be more common under climate change. The thing that is broadly speaking an aggressive you know attack on climate change is pushing the country's electrical grid to be carbon neutral or carbon free by 2035. You know, it's not a Green New Deal. It's not nothing, but it might be nothing because we don't actually know if any of that's going to wind up in the infrastructure bill.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, it would actually, it would be, I think, mm-hmm. fair to say, based on the reading I've done, really significant if by 2035 we were completely carbon-free in our national power generation.
Mm-hmm.
I also have zero faith that that could be done. Based on the current political realities on the ground and based on the current political will to make any kind of
that's not very far changes. In the future, you know?
It's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least make it 2033 so it rhymes. Come on.
There we go. Carbon-free by 2033.
That's branding
right
there.
It's called messaging, folks.
Come on. Cody, you've missed an opportunity.
President Cody Johnston and Secretary of Defense Warmbo.
I don't know about that.
You think we're bombing Syria now? Wait till Warmbo gets the button.
This is about to suggest Warmbo be a guest sometime, but I don't think anybody wants that. I certainly don't.
I know you don't. There's no way.
I have a confession, and that's I love the character of Warmbo. The voice makes me insane, as it does a lot of you. So
I hate
on
that voice even more than you hate Cody's time machine noises.
I do.
Ooh, that's bold. Wow. Mm-hmm.
The time machine noises are
He's
quicker.
Crying in the corner right now. He can hear you.
Mm-hmm. But it speaks to your talent, Cody. You're so good.
Mm-hmm.
That I could be really obnoxious.
Grating that nerve.
We could have him go back in time to the first time you heard the time machine noises
please,
and see if
no.
we can reprogram your brain.
That feels like a Christmas special or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're visited by the ghosts of all of the people who are going to die
time
from
machine.
Inadequate infrastructure.
So many of our listeners are like, what are you talking about?
It's a puppet. Cody owns a puppet. It's a real problem to everyone who cares about him.
Katie Golden made that
local
puppet.
Hero, Warmbo.
Anyway.
So we've got some folks on the D side of things who are at least have expressed a commitment to like not let the White House get away with kind of leaving climate change focused policy on the cutting room floor to be able to say, we got a deal. One of those guys is Ed Markey from Massachusetts, a senator who said, from my perspective, no climate, no deal. I just won't vote. I won't just vote against an infrastructure package without climate action. I'll fight against it, which I think is the attitude we have to have. Because
one of them need to be acting like that.
Yeah.
Making it the urgent emergency that it is when they talk about this.
Yeah.
Fight like fucking hell. Sorry.
Go ahead. You have to fight like and there's a lot of things that are frustrating to me right now about the left. One of them is that. So there's a there's a push. It's like the force the vote movement, right? And it's this push to try and force a vote in Congress on Medicare for All. And for one thing, it's kind of started based on a misunderstanding of how Congress works. And they've kind of altered what they're trying to force. I think it's Pelosi now to do based on the fact that they didn't initially understand what the mechanics of kind of forcing a vote were. I'm very much in favor of Medicare for All. I also think that making this the big fight focus that you're trying to rally people behind is less of an immediate concern than keeping the planet habitable. I have a number of issues, and I'm not one of those where we can only do this one thing when there's a serious problem. But I do think the focus, if you're going to try to force action on something, if you're going to try to build a movement that's capable of fucking, and I'm not seeing any signs
that's capable of fucking. Hell yeah.
It's capable of like, I do think we need a movement, a political movement, a grassroots one in the United States that is capable of, you know, carrying out something like a general strike or just a general strike in order to force action on a number of things. But I would put climate change at the top of the fucking list, right?
Yep,
because
I would
it
too.
Fuels everything else. Not only does it cause a number of healthcare conditions that will make people, you know, need more like that, that will put people in medical distress and as a result of that put them in the debt, but it fuels the rise of authoritarianism. It fuels or it provides kind of additional Like, it's a big part of where policing money is going right now, right? Like, mm-hmm. one of the things that is kind of an underreported story is that after the Paradise fires in California, where, like, a whole town was wiped out, a really significant chunk of the people who lost their home in those fires still don't have a home, and a bunch of them live yep. in camps where they're being heavily policed
yep.
by cops who keep getting more money to police homelessness or whatever, you know, the fucking liberal politicians who throw money at cops mm-hmm. for this shit because they don't want to see people, you know, in tents in their parks throw money at. And it's a all of these problems are connected to a number of things, right? And you could say that, yes, of course, a better healthcare system is a part of dealing with this and would help these people, but nothing is as much of an immediate threat as climate change.
Yeah.
And we're all guilty. I'm certainly not we're all guilty. There have been some people who have made this their only fucking organizing issue for decades, and all credit to them. I'm certainly guilty of having, and there you know, I might have argued at other points that there were more immediate concerns just because people with guns and whatnot pointing them in our faces, RE, you know, the rise of authoritarianism, the fascist street movements and stuff. But I think for me, at least, the thing I'm going to be focusing on is a mix of trying to push and trying to do whatever, what little I can to enable people to take more organized action, to force action on political action on climate change, and yeah. to help different mutual aid programs that are dealing with making people more resilient to the symptoms of climate change.
Yeah.
And I think those have to be, I think that's where there's a future for the organized left. And I also think that's where it's kind of beholden upon us to put our resources.
I agree yeah. with you completely, to borrow a phrase from Even More News. And it feels almost bad because it's me saying that this is the urgent priority that trumps everything else. Doesn't quite resonate in my soul because, of course, you know, authoritarianism, our fucked up policing system, the money that's spent in their healthcare, all of these are vital as well. But if we have a limited amount of capital and pull, what is the most important thing that that affects, like you said, all of that? And again, we have to do everything within our power to make that and keep that on the forefront of everybody's minds. And to what you said, Robert, this is just a tangent, you know, about Paradise, California. You know, I believe that there was a lot of trouble with, I'd have to look this up, insurance payouts and different things like that. In terms of getting people, and you know, a lot of people didn't own their homes, you know, and they've lost everything and have no recourse. But along those lines, now Northern California, you know, insurance companies might stop providing wildfire insurance, fire insurance. Yeah. What are we doing? What are we doing here, leaving people completely unprotected?
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's I won't say I disagree with anything that's been said. I do think that it's a matter of umbrellaing these sort of issues.
Yeah.
Like, I think I have no real yeah. issue with a force the vote thing on Medicare for All. Honestly, like, aside from like the mechanics and the specifics.
The mechanics of it, right? My arguments, yes, but I don't have an issue with yes.
But aside from that, like,
organizing folks,
right?
Yeah, and just like the messaging of like, we just got out of a pandemic, got out of quote unquote. Healthcare is like, I mean, it's still like the second most important issue to voters. It's mm-hmm. very, like, it affects everybody. It will affect people even more and more given all these climate scenarios. It seems like the current administration has completely dropped this idea of, because obviously, like, he's not. There's
of
no
Medicare,
plan to do Medicare
for all
from him.
I mean,
but
he
no,
never...
he's dropped the idea of like a public option. I'm not saying Medicare for all. Oh. Obviously, Joe Biden is not for Medicare for all. He said he'd veto it. But like, just as healthcare as an issue, as something that needs to be fought on, and it would be nice to keep that in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And yeah, frame it in the context of this
as part of this conversation,
this mutual disaster that we're all going
yeah,
to be experiencing.
I see that. And again, I'm not sitting here saying we shouldn't be fighting for Medicare for all.
No.
I don't think that's what anybody yeah. said. I just, I want it to continue to be a part of the conversation, because aside from this sort, like the sort of force the group, force the vote crowd, it's completely dropped off.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, you can look at, you know, like reports like, yeah, Biden's just like not going to work on that public option that he, that was the compromise. The compromise was him. And very predictably, doesn't seem like that's going to happen.
He can't get anything done.
But yeah, and just like being able to frame it in this way, like, yeah, okay, we just experienced a pandemic. What if there's another one? What about the all these effects of climate change that we're going to see? People need healthcare and housing and food and water and a lot of things already. And this is going to make things worse. Yeah. And
I think
really, to your point, Robert, what you were saying is being able to talk about these things in that context.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People experience this stuff every single year now.
Yep.
In various ways. One year it might be too fucking hot, and next year it's a blizzard. Like everybody is affected in myriad ways. And being able to talk about what you want to do to help people. We want you to be able to go to a doctor if shit goes wrong. We want you to be able to have a roof over your head if shit goes bad. All these things, say what you are able to do to help people in the context, again, of this mutual disaster that we're all slowly experiencing.
And it's tough to, I don't know. Yes, I agree. Like, I'm not saying, I guess what I'm saying is that if you're going to organize to try to nationwide force a vote on something, I think climate change is a more immediate thing. And I also think that you have a better shot of doing it because the infrastructure bill is currently up right now. Like, this is the thing that's being discussed at the moment. And so that would be my argument. Not that I have any issue with trying to, other than kind of some technical ones about like, well, that's not necessarily how the system works.
It's the kind of thing
piss people off no matter how we frame this, but that's
it's not an easy conversation. There's not a clear
but I think it, like, really what it comes down to is, yes, they should exercise their power and withhold things and force people to go on record as to what they actually believe in and how they will vote, and make America watch them talk about it, watch them debate this issue, talk about the things that are affecting people's lives publicly. I don't know.
Well, I think that's it for today. Looking at our clock here.
Wait, Wormbo, any thoughts?
God,
no, he's asleep. It's fine.
Oh, he's asleep.
He's asleeping. Yeah,
yeah. Maybe Cody take a time machine trip back to when he was awake.
When he was awake.
I'm gonna stop recording.
I'll pass on that for the sake of our listeners.
All right.
Which I mean, Katie. Okay, I'm gonna stop.
Well, I haven't stopped recording yet. Thanks for listening, guys. This was a pretty good conversation. Check us out online at Worst Year Pod on Twitter and Instagram, et cetera. And
et cetera.
Et cetera. And
that means
thanks for listening to Truthcast, the only fact pod on the internet.
I hate it. Keep
it classy, like myself with a crossbow.
I am now canceling all of our
Someone
other podcasts.
Someone send me a picture of me with a crossbow.
Truthcast every day, every hour, on the hour.
Every hour. No sleep for any of us, so the Truthcast will get increasingly
Truth
more
doesn't sleep.
I will be your special guest on Tuesdays. All right, guys.
Be your special guest every hour.
Every hour, on the hour!
Until I start talking about the Rothschilds.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll take a hiatus.
for everyone's sake, the episode is over.
Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.